This is my job, I will not quit it. Pulled me out the depths when I thought that I was finished. Yeah, I question.
Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Anthony Alvarado from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. And I want to give a big shout out to everyone who has supported us over the last three episodes. You can find those episodes on weallrisetogether.org. Again, that's weallrisetogether.org. Man, the feedback that we've been getting has been absolutely amazing. And that's why we started this Rise and Grind Recovery Radio podcast, is to get a message of not only education awareness out there, but ultimately to get a message of support to those that are struggling with addiction or mental health. We truly believe here that not only will this awareness help to prevent this addiction epidemic from getting worse, but it also helped to save the lives of our community's youth. This week, we also want to give a big shout out to all the families who have been supporting Rise and Grind. This episode, especially from the families that have been impacted by addiction or those who have unfortunately lost a son or daughter or family member to this horrible disease of addiction. Thank you for sponsoring this week's episode. Much love.
Looking to bring a positive message to your next event? Contact Air and Allies. Air and Allies specializes in bringing entertainment to recovery events, daytime music events, and family-friendly community events. Air and Allies also specializes in bringing artists who bring a positive message to reinforce a better lifestyle to events like Mile of Music. Air and Allies can also help you plan and organize your event to make it successful. To learn more about making your event successful and feature a positive message, email Air and Allies at airandallies@gmail.com or look for the link on this podcast.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Back again, Anthony Alvarado, Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, and in the house today we have Adam Racette.
What's up?
And then we also have Bev Kelly Miller.
Hi.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
You're doing good. That's good.
I'm doing great, man.
Yeah,
doing great.
So, what have you been up to the last week, man?
We just had an event at the Boys and Girls Club where we were pushing the movie Heroes Rising, which brings awareness to heroin and opiate use in our youth and the school system. That's what the movie's about, but we released the soundtrack, I believe, a couple weeks ago now.
Yeah.
And so we had the guy from the local area in Appleton come and perform some songs off the soundtrack. We flew in my buddy from California, Buku One, who is a professional graffiti artist and skateboarder slash, I guess he's
creative
like a,
talent.
Yeah, I mean, he does all sorts
he's
of stuff.
He's a mad master like of graffiti.
Master of all. You know, jack of all trades.
Yeah, he's a pretty cool guy.
He's like master of all. I don't know how he does it. But he came in and did a live piece, graffiti piece for the kids at the Boys and Girls Club. And then we kind of, we went inside from there. We did it outside, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we went in from there and just talked to the kids. And we had them do some freestyling and... I know Buku talked a little bit. He's got a company that basically goes into the schools and talks to kids about using their artistic talents and kind of forming a business out of that. Like,
okay,
what do you do with your artistic talents after you get out of high school?
Yeah.
Most kids kind of let them go because they don't know what to do with that. And, you know, part of that comes into play with the movie because we had kids acting in the movie. We had kids holding the cameras and doing the editing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just trying to introduce kids to the idea that there is an actual way to make a living using some of your God-given gifts.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, like not only creativity, but also taking a look at what are you really good at. I know that's
right.
A message that we're constantly sharing at the schools in front of students, like finding what you're good at, finding your passions, finding your purpose, and then using those talents to, you know, find a way to support yourself
right.
long-term.
And finding a way to stay confident with those things, because along with talent comes insecurity as well.
Yeah.
And, you know,
nobody's perfect, right?
Right. Nobody's perfect. We just talked about that. But yeah, so it was a great weekend we had with him. I'm hoping to get him back into Wisconsin sometime next year for some job fairs, and he's going to be speaking at some high schools as well in the Appleton area. So it was a great weekend.
Yeah, it was great to be there and see, you know, the graffiti. I love street art, and then it's something I've always been following for a long time. So actually to see somebody do it, I thought I would always do my own street art, but I always kept it to pencil and maybe some tagging, you know, maybe some marker action, but that's about it. When I was younger, not now.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, you might see some Rise Together tags out there somewhere, a few places.
Maybe I can get him to do one for you.
Right. Absolutely. That'd be cool. That'd be cool. We had that, I know a few years ago, somebody did a big mural for us and that was fantastic. But man, it was cool hanging out with him too. You know, just went out to Chicago Grill and ate some food. You know,
super nice guy.
Super nice guy. Great with the kids. How did the show go later at night?
It was pretty good. You know, we did – typically what I do when I bring these guys in here, I'm also a booking agent. So, like, I'll bring these guys out here to do some community work and then to help afford bringing these guys in because it does cost money. Absolutely. No matter which way you look at it. I put them – we had a night show at one of the venues downtown Appleton. Mm-hmm. And we had a good night, man, and it was cool. He got to speak a little on just why we were there and everything. I met some interesting people there that were really excited about what mm-hmm. we were doing when I told them about the movie and why we were there. And Jesse Heffernan was there as well.
Man.
Yeah, he came in
for a little
while.
He doesn't even get out of the house. What is he
got
doing?
I know. When he told me he was going, I was like, you're going to be there?
I know, and I couldn't even go that night because I had the kids and stuff. So
he got a free hat from Buku, one of the straight brim hats, dang. And he was like, so I can't wear one of these. Yeah, now he's cool.
Now he's cool.
Super cool.
Oh, man. So what do you got going on? I mean, is there something coming up that we should be looking out for here in Appleton or throughout the greater Wisconsin area?
As far as my involvement, I'm sorry, but I'm going to be boring right now. I don't have too much coming
up. Well, we're getting closer to Christmas and everything.
Right.
But you are working
holidays.
To promote the movie. So where can people get information about Heroes Rising?
You can get information about Heroes Rising from heroesrisingmovie.com. You can go and check out Heroes Rising on Facebook, and that page would also direct you to mm-hmm. wherever you need to go. And then there's also links. You know, we're still trying to help raise some money to pay for some of the things that we did with the movie, and there's always ways you can come and donate. Find out those links on the page.
So that's heroesrising.com, right?
Heroesrisingmovie.com.
Heroesrisingmovie.com.
Yes.
All right, so make sure you guys check that out. They're looking for support, but also they got some great content out there.
Absolutely.
Really great effort overall. Please check out that movie as soon as you can. Go to the Facebook or to the website. Outside of that, I know we're leaving Bev over there, and she's also from the Appleton community, somebody that is out there making a huge difference and advocating for change and has graced us with her, you know, presence here today. And I think you guys are really going to get an opportunity to listen to somebody who is extremely passionate and heartfelt. I recently got a chance to speak with Bev at Fox Valley Tech. And how did the rest of the day go for you?
It went well.
It went well. I mean, there's a nice group of students there. And so I know already, you know, kind of what you do. But if you want to share with the audience a little bit of who you are and what you're doing throughout the Fox Valley area.
Last April 14th, 2015, I lost my daughter, Megan, forever 22, to a heroin overdose. And what really precipitated my speaking out is the crisis center lady said to me that day that we found Megan, it's really a sad thing that no one is really going to know what Megan died from. And I said, no, I'm going to make sure everybody knows what Megan died from. Yep. Because if we don't talk about the heroin overdoses, the opiate overdoses, we don't bring it to the light, more people are going to die, and more people are going to be walking in my shoes. So I do present Megan's story of family addiction, and I billet that, because when one person in the family is addicted, the entire family is affected. And my niece is also addicted to heroin, so it's even outside of the immediate family, because there are 89 genes that are associated with addiction. And the very first time that you use, you begin to turn on your genes. The only way that you're not going to be addicted is if you don't use.
And I want to stop you there. And first of all, thank you for being so open and honest and having the courage to not only stand up in what you believe in and try to change the community, but ultimately to go through and relive that family hardship. I mean, you were out here today, and you've been out there for over a year advocating for change by telling your daughter's story. And Megan, forever 22.
Right.
You know, and I can't even imagine as a parent what that must be like. And I'm not going to try to act like I would. I do have fears that maybe my children may grow up and suffer with a mental illness or maybe even addiction. And I hope they can get help if they do, you know, experience those challenges. And I've almost lost my father, which I know we have even talked about. And you've given me support in regards to some of that over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And that has been literally so challenging for me that it has broken me down in every single way, both personally, professionally, spiritually, and even mentally. And that talk about how addiction impacts a family, that also spreads throughout my relationship with my children, my friends, my relationships with, you know, the community and also the rest of my family. And we have to, as uncomfortable it is, sit here today and talk about these hardships in hopes that we bring some hope back to the community, right? Because one thing that I wanted to address in this first segment is something that we talked about last week when Nadine was in the studio, and we talked specifically about the information that you gave to me via text saying, we have lost these number of people in the Fox Valley area, and if we don't do something now, it's going to continue to get worse. So could you talk a little bit about what has been happening within the Fox Valley region?
I've been made aware that there have been 7, possibly 8, overdose deaths that have occurred from September 15th on through October
16th.
Well, 16th was the one I was aware of, but I just was made aware of another one that happened. I don't know the name. Mm-hmm. And that's often the case, is most people aren't aware of the names. But because of the position I'm in, having lost my daughter, I'm in a lot of closed groups. So there are a lot of people who will inform me almost immediately when someone has overdosed and died. And then they point me also in the direction of either the obituary, which oftentimes does not have any information at all about the real cause of the death. And so the only one that I'm aware of, there was one that died on October 6th. And, you know, like I know his stepmom, but I don't know the rest of the family. And so, but it's a prominent family in Appleton, so, or actually Nina. And so addiction doesn't discriminate. Yeah. It can happen to anyone. And when I do my presentations, I tell people, in fact, I made a t-shirt that shows my daughter's picture and her name, what she died from, and then how we knew 5 people who died in less than 2 years before Megan died. And so, and many more have died since Megan. And oftentimes, I do feel helpless. Mm-hmm. People will come to me and say, okay, my son, my daughter is addicted. Where can I go for help? And so I have to rely on the resources that other people have given me. Mm-hmm. And I'm more than willing to reach out to point people in the direction to get their family member help.
Absolutely.
I do know, having gone through certification to be a recovery coach with you, Anthony, and that's where we really connected.
Yep.
That was last June in 2015. There is hope and success into recovery. And we'll be talking about the Wisconsin Sharing Without Shame quilt that I initiated to bring into as a traveling quilt to be brought into anywhere where I brought it last week at Fox Valley Tech in Oshkosh. So, and it's surprisingly, or maybe I should say unsurprisingly, students there ages 16 to 20 actually knew some of the people on the quilt.
Yeah, yeah. And even seeing some recognizable faces in the crowd that day, right. Some of my family, and seeing the impact of what we're talking about today has made personally on him, and then vice versa, seeing that motivation, that momentum of a young student between the ages 16 and 20 years old actually want to make a stand and say, you know, we need to prevent this from happening. And part of it where we're at today is while we don't have enough access to the treatment and support services for individuals that struggle with mental health or addiction, whether they're young or they're a young person, a young adult, or even a senior for that matter, the reality of the situation is that both you and I, as community advocates and community leaders, are constantly getting requests, whether that's via email or social media through Facebook or Instagram or whatever the measure is or the platform, and people are asking for help. And I can give them direction as a peer support or a recovery coach would, and I can even maybe direct them to some services here in the Fox Valley or greater Northeast Wisconsin area, maybe even beyond. But in all reality is that we are finding it almost impossible to get people in treatment within the right amount of time, which in other words, like right when they ask for it, it just isn't available.
Right.
Like my father is actually going to be getting an assessment, but it's going to take 2 weeks until he gets that assessment just to get the assessment. And that doesn't even include when he's going to be able to actually go through treatment. And there's already signs of relapsing showing up, even though he's out of the hospital and even though he's in a nursing home now, which is a better situation than he has been in over the last 5 weeks, which I did want to tell all of our audience that he is seeing some progress, which I can't be more than grateful for. But knowing all the connections that we have, I'm still having a really hard time finding the right support for my father, who I don't want to lose.
Right.
And can you imagine, which we talked about last episode, is like, can you imagine what that feels like for, like, let's say an everyday person, or Adam, who is a little bit less connected to recovery support services here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, could you, if a friend reached out to you, really give them the direction? And do you even know where to start?
I mean, there's some places I would send them to because I've been through some things.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said too, like when an addict decides that they need help, it can go away very quickly as well. You know, for instance, like I kind of lucked out a few years ago when I had put myself in a treatment, which was the last time, hopefully, that I'll be in a treatment facility.
Right.
But
right.
I kind of lucked out and was able to get in right away just because there were spots open.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that's not the case. And a family member of mine has just been going through this. And, you know, he's like, I really need some help. And I'm ready to do this. And he made a phone call and they didn't call back for 3 days and he was using already again, you know? And I know for a fact, cause our family was there to support him, that if he would have been able to even get down there and have an interview, with us being there to support him, cause we wanted to be there. And then it just kind of lags on and it's kind of scary because, you know, addiction is that hardcore. I mean, addiction is hardcore. It grabs a hold of the people.
And it can happen like that.
Yeah.
Right? So I know for my own personal story of recovery and also like my family members that have struggled with addiction, like literally within a matter of weeks, that person went from the very first instance of relapse to a very heavy amount of drug use, which has led to other problems that they've had to be challenged with, including like furthering stress and anxiety and depression and really feeling that hopelessness. So Bev, that's why your role in the community is absolutely crucial to bring some of that hope back into the conversation and also bring a reality to the subject matter, even if it is uncomfortable, because I know that you're a community advocate also for change, which is something that I want to talk about a little bit, not only just what you do with the school-based presentations and even some of the work that we're probably going to do throughout the next year together, but more importantly, you have a great ability to identify some of the community needs. So I know there's some uncomfortable conversations around like assisted medicated treatment, and then also looking at the fact that we don't have a proper detox facility throughout right. this region, which is two things, at least to start, that we could really start focusing on. But there's been a lot of pushback. And can you maybe give a little bit of insight on why you believe that is so and what needs to be done?
Well, the PARI program out in Gloucester, Massachusetts, that was started last June, has resulted in many police departments also following suit, where you can go to the police and turn in your drugs or drug paraphernalia. And they do have a place down in Greenfield, Wisconsin, down by Milwaukee, that has a care program. And I did go to a heroin summit on September 23rd in Waukesha mm-hmm. County Tech. And I listened to the detective talk about their program. And we need to do this. We need to have a similar program. I've talked to Todd Thomas from Appleton Police Department. Sean Cuther also told me in March the holdup on getting that same program here in Appleton is finding a detox facility.
Okay.
We can't wait.
Right.
Look at all the overdoses that have happened. The biggest thing is the withdrawal symptoms. People don't want to go through withdrawal. But in order to get into a lot of the treatment facilities, you have to detox first.
Right.
And that was Megan's biggest fear, too.
Absolutely.
She didn't want to do that. So exactly 1 year to the date that she did go or that she died, I sent her to Detroit, Michigan, and it was $7,800 for her to go to detox. And so...
And who has $7,800
right?
to shell out? I mean,
no,
I would have to borrow it from everybody.
I had to put it on a credit card.
Or a credit card. Yep. Or a loan.
Yep.
Just to go through detox. Right. That's not even treatment.
Right. No. And then she got very sick. She got pancreatitis afterwards.
Okay.
So... You know, there's a lot of things that can happen through detox, even though many insurance companies will say, oh,
it's not
we're not going to cover that. It's not that bad to go through. Well, if they had to go through it, they would think that it is
Absolutely.
Bad.
Absolutely.
And
which
so,
is, for all the listeners out there, like detox and going through withdrawals is some of the scariest points in somebody's life during active use. I mean, for me, for family members, I remember literally rolling around in bed because there was no detox facility, just pouring sweat, not able to sleep, literally screaming and crying and like ripping my hair out, kind of feeling like restless leg syndrome, puking, diarrhea, you name it. There's that pain alone, if you don't have any type of like medical support, you can suffer from dehydration and a number of other health concerns that can drive you right back to use, because you know, as a user, the moment you start using again, all that pain, quote unquote, goes away. Isn't that right?
Oh, yes. And there are people, known cases, where people have died in jail from detoxing. And they're not even medically assisted. It's a sad situation because there are no policies or procedures in jail to handle detox.
No, I was talking to Representative John Nygren, and we were talking about the need for detox. And there is a possibility of working with the Wisconsin Hospital Association to start providing open beds throughout the local facilities, you know, and think how great that would be, maybe even just to start to have an open bed or open detox section of the hospital, not recreating a new brick and mortar, not necessarily even buying new property or real estate, but using what we already have, you know, and whether it's a walk-in clinic or whatever reasonable place that the medical professionals deem fit, we would have those spaces provided, whether it is a few beds or a lot of beds. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But maybe we can start in those type of traditional facilities, not recreate the wheel. You know, if people need to withdraw and they need to go through detox and they need to be supported medically, then we should be able to provide those people with the right type of support. And then from there, they would be able to enter or potentially enter a treatment facility because they would be through that detox period and receive the care and the support that they need. And then, in turn, maybe even be given recovery support services on the back end, whether it's support groups or a peer support specialist or a recovery coach to help them to develop a core recovery plan that can be sustainable and long-lasting. So then you can have those long-lasting conversations of, where do I get a home? Where do I go? Where do I get a job? You know what I mean? Where do I go ahead and maybe even further my education or change my living situation to help support this big change in my life? Because so much of it is that versus just getting clean and sober.
Correct.
But as a community need, if we have up to eight in the last 30 days that have already died of a drug overdose or a related instance, I guarantee you probably most of those people, one, were filled with shame and guilt and they didn't want to ask for help. And if some of them were asking for help, it might have been a situation where they were afraid to go through withdrawal, so they didn't face that fear. Or maybe some of them tried to and they went back. Or maybe they tried to access treatment and support and they couldn't get it because either it cost too much, they didn't have the insurance to cover the costs, or it just wasn't available because you had to wait 2, 3, 4 months or more. Like, that happens every single day. So when the community, if you're out there listening, and I hope you are, these are some of the things that need to change. Yes, more interaction with education, awareness, and talking about the issue. I mean, we're never going to change a problem if we don't talk about it, right?
Correct.
But also, yes, we do need a detox facility. And there are programs and models out there that are successful, which Bev has indicated. But we need community action, people's voices to go to the town hall meeting, to go to the coalition meeting, to contact the local police department and say, we need these services like yesterday, or more people are going to die. And then we do need that facility, and then we also need more treatment and more support on the back end. And it's going to take a long time to get there. And part of the reason it's not changing people is because nobody's listening. Like, nobody is really paying attention. Like, we say all the time now that 129 people per day in the United States die of a drug overdose. Well, that's like a plane crashing every single day. Every single day.
And it's sad.
And where do you see it on the headlines?
Right.
Like, we had to create our own radio show in hopes to bring the right type of awareness right here to our own backyard here in Wisconsin because nobody's paying attention. And when they do pay attention, it's brief, right, Adam?
Yeah.
I mean, you just did a search on the internet before we got on this interview. It was almost impossible to find any stories of concern around these deaths and these losses.
There was almost none.
Yeah. I mean, we brought up the Ohio story and the parents that, you know, were put out there because they were, you know, overdosed with their son in the back. And then there was the instance in Menasha of the gas station overdose death.
And we were just saying, too, like, if she wouldn't have died in that gas station area, we probably would have never heard about it. It just happened in a public place. So
do you
it's
know,
almost like they had to report it because...
Do you know when we were running around doing those hope posters, like the Good Samaritan call for hope? I wanted to get Quick Trip to actually put in those posters in their bathrooms. But to even have that conversation was like almost impossible because of the social stigma that surrounds addiction. And yet, a couple years later, there's a death in Quick Trip's bathroom.
Yeah.
Like,
and those
are we missing something? Like,
last year, Megan's friend got released from jail. By the afternoon, she had overdosed in the CVS bathroom. She was only saved because an employee at CVS had to get into the bathroom, and she administered Narcan to her.
Wow.
Man, I mean, those are the stories. Right here, Wisconsin, Green Bay, Appleton, Menasha, Nina, Oshkosh, all up and down 41, suburban, rural, metropolitan areas, you name it, does not discriminate. Addiction, mental health, it is in every family. At least one out of every four people in America are impacted by addiction. And about 90% of the people that struggle with addiction start before the age of 18. But we're not even comfortable to have that conversation to help prevent these issues from getting worse. So now we're just reacting. So if you were to tell somebody out there right now that's listening, like, how can I get involved? What would you say to them, Bev?
Contact Anthony. Contact me. Contact Jesse Heffernan. Contact anyone you know who's in an organization. Like tonight, the Wisconsin Weekend meeting is at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in the second floor from the main entrance. Mm-hmm. And if you are listening out there and have a family member who is addicted, we meet the second and fourth Monday every month from 6 until 7:30. And it's a support group for families who have family members who are suffering from the disease of addiction.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much, Beth, for giving that resource. And is there an email that somebody could reach out to you if they have any questions, or a Facebook page that they could be directed to?
My Facebook page is Bev, B-E-V, Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y, hyphen M-I-L-L-E-R, Miller. And I'm on Facebook. I publicly publish things. Mm-hmm. I don't go necessarily on the closed groups, so that I am advocating and educating people, trying to prevent this and trying to wake up people to the fact that this is happening right here in our own backyard.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bev. Kelly Miller and Adam, thank you so much for being in the studio today as well.
Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. All right, guys, let's hear a message from our sponsors.
Are you looking to prevent drug use throughout your community? Rise Together is a national movement that is helping to educate and spread awareness on mental health and addiction. After traveling 100,000 miles and speaking to over 120,000 young people in just 3 years, they currently have one of the best school speaking programs in the world. They are now available for school seminars, event speaking, motivational workshops, public panels, and even corporate trainings. Contact them now by visiting www.weallrisetogether.org.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70. Baby, my heart could still fall less. Gone and my memory fades, and the crowds don't remember my name. When my hands don't play the strings the same way, I know you will still love me the same. 'Cause honey, your soul could never grow. Baby, your smile's forever.
Hey, 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 what's up, everyone? This is Anthony Alvarado back at you from Rise and Grind Recovery Radio, and I have my awesome co-host in here, Adam Ray Set, just crushing it on the mic.
What's up?
What's up? What's
Rise
up?
Rise and Grind.
Man, it's so good to have you in the studio. I know last time we were on the episode together, you were talking a little bit about how much you appreciate being in the studio, but man, I appreciate you and all the work that
doing
out there, man. Again, I want to give everybody a little bit of insight of what Adam is doing here. He is out here making a difference through music. That's right, music and special events with Air and Allies. I know you mentioned it on the first part of this episode, but why don't you go a little bit more into what Air and Allies is today?
So Air and Allies was put together. I had this idea that we could take artists that had positive music and bring them to recovery events to show our youth and people in recovery that, you know, it's not just the negative mainstream music that you see that we all have to live up to. There is actual people that are quote unquote cool that make music that don't have to curse and swear and talk about
and
drugs
about,
and alcohol and women,
you know, all those things
in all of their
smoking
music.
Smoking Mad Blunts,
yeah.
Wiz Khalifa.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all he says, man. The same thing over and over.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, coming from my background, I've been booking national acts for about five years now. And I was very deep, you know, I performed as well. So like I was going to shows, I was performing, I was booking them, I was hanging out with the artists that were coming into town. And, you know, these artists want drugs when they come into town. And these are the guys, I mean, you're paying people thousands of dollars to come and perform at these events. And they're asking you to go find drugs for them.
Yeah.
And I mean, it just became regular. It was like an everyday thing. It wasn't, you know, I at a certain point, I was already like finding the drugs before people even came into town,
right,
because I knew it was going to be asked for.
Made you a quote unquote better business manager.
It made me, right. The hospitality was grand
was
on
grand.
My end.
Right. Right.
You know,
maybe life risking, maybe even show risking.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even start to talk about all the shows that have been missed and delayed because of drug use, alcohol use, partying, either during that tour or right before that show.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, a couple years ago, I made the decision to get clean and get away from the drugs. And
good for you, man.
You know, it's really crazy, too, because when you make the decision to get clean, like, you know, a lot of people and younger kids, they get clean and they think that they can still hang around the same people and stay clean. And that is just not true. I would have to imagine 99% of the time that's just not going to work for somebody that's really trying to stay away
for a short period of time.
Yeah,
but that's
very short.
Not the method for madness.
So one thing that, you know, I realized is, you know, you change your drug use to nothing, and then you need to change your friends, and you need to put yourself in places. It's not easy. Like, you're changing your whole life. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't just, I quit drugs, now I go about my life the way it was, but drugs aren't there. Mm-hmm. Like, the people you surround yourself and the people that are giving you information about life and the things that you can do with it, that also needs to change. So with Aaron Allies, that was like a big thing too. You know, we realized, and I've been through treatment quite a few times throughout my life, you know, when there's that guy on stage with the suit and tie that's probably 40 years older than you, giving you some drone speech about, you know, why you should stay clean. Like, kids just aren't connecting with that kind of stuff these days. So Aaron Allies, you know, not only do I bring music to these events, but we've gone and spoken at Boys Rawhide Ranch and any other opportunity we get to talk about our personal experiences. We like to talk about that with the kids because they get to see us. You know, most of us are like tattooed up and just look like the average guy on the street.
Right.
And
relatable.
And I feel like we're relatable. And I think that's where Aaron Allies can impact and be, you know, like, that's the most important aspect of what we have to offer, because we're really using ourselves to connect with these kids.
So you mean to tell me, just for a second, that, and I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. that, you know, community education awareness are important, but you can also do it in a fun, awesome, and amazing way that not only is engaging and relatable, but actually makes a difference in the community. And that might even be through music and through cool guys, quote unquote, that can
quote
go
unquote.
Talk to these students about some of the realities of the social situation that you live in. And it's effective? That works for you?
I mean, I think it is. You know, just my experience in the last year, we've done a lot more work. I started doing Aaron Allies about 2 years ago, and it was a slow start. You know I had to gain trust mm-hmm. from people, and I didn't want to be the big hypocrite saying, hey, kids, don't do this, but I'm still living this other
right.
lifestyle. So it took a while for me to really be confident about where I was at. But yeah, man, you know, we've had people come up and approach us. And that's the coolest thing. Like, when you get done with an event and some younger kids come up and actually approach you and ask you questions about your addiction. Can you go? I've had kids ask me if they can go to a meeting with them.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Giving me their numbers. You know, that's the kind of thing that makes me feel like this is like a good thing and the right thing to do, and that the more power I gain being able to do things through this company, like, I feel like we're going to have more kids come and relate with us and ask us how they can get help, or you know, just ask us more about our story, or, you know, whatever. It's just that's the kind of thing that makes it all worth it.
Well, I just want to take a moment with the listeners and with you, man, like, just thanking you for having the courage to do so. Like, one, to ask for help and change your life, and now because you've been able to get the support that you needed and change your life for your family and for yourself, most importantly, that also is impacting your community in a positive way, not only just through the artists that you work with, but you're driving that core mission and going out there in hopes to at least bring some hope back to your own backyard. And I think that is one of the biggest and greatest characters that we can hold during such a great time of need. So thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you for allowing me to have a platform.
And I know we're going to continue the work together. And if somebody else wanted to work with you, again, can you tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can hit me. My email is airandallies@gmail.com. And then, I mean, Adam Reset on Facebook, you can hit me up personally in a private message. If you have any questions about anything, I can do my best to point you in the right direction. Or if you need event organizing or music for your recovery event, give me a call on Facebook too. And that's pretty much how we're doing it right now.
Absolutely. And for anybody else out there, if it's a pro-social activity or a recovery event, ultimately we can all party, but we can party sober.
Yeah.
And we can go out there and really make sobriety cool and awesome and amazing as it is. I mean, there's plenty of comments out there about this, like, cool, hip, awesome, you know, drug lifestyle, but we don't hear the constant message of how amazing it is just to be clean and sober and healthy and living this super rad life, still doing all these amazing things that everybody else does, except I'm not waking up with a hangover, right? Like, hangovers absolutely suck. This is, like, the worst thing, one of the worst things to go through, but at the same time, like, we live in a culture, especially here in Wisconsin, that just accepts, like, drug use and especially alcohol use. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about alcohol, that's a beast in its own, you know, and here in Wisconsin, we like to drink.
It seems like there's been a lot of bragging about the fact Wisconsin is the number one alcoholic state in our country.
Right, and I think we have, like, it was a report that came out through the Appleton Post-Crescent and Gannett Media that, you know, Wisconsin made, like, 18 out of the 20 top most drunkest cities in America, and I posted it on a Rise Together Facebook page, and most of the comments that I saw otherwise were really just in support, like this badge of honor saying, yes, you bet we are, you know, and we're going to continue to prove ourselves. So that's like, that's a Goliath in itself, right? But ultimately, like, if we can serve our community in a better way, in the senses of, like, really addressing the fact that there are people that may not even have, like, problems with addiction, but also just want to be not drunk or not high. And if we were able to create environments at other special events where sobriety can be supported, well, then that's how we start changing the culture. And I think even if you had, let's say, a sober tent at Oktoberfest or a sober tent at Milo Music or maybe Summerfest or any of the other major concerts that are out there. Yeah. Because really, when I go to those big events, it's just a big drunk fest.
Yeah.
And for me, I have to go with, like, a crew of sober sidekicks in order to be able to survive in those social situations. Because, like, I'm literally standing next to somebody that's, like, smoking, like, the craziest blunt I've ever seen, and it puts me at risk. Right?
Yep.
And I have to have somebody right next to me that can actually say no for me, because that automatically is going to start triggering all those old behaviors.
I mean, that's addiction.
But at the same time, like, I want to see the cool band that's in front of me. Like, when I went to the Life is Beautiful Festival in Vegas, I couldn't help but to think about the work that you do. I mean, here you had creativity, you had art, you had all these inspiring musicians, and it was like a cool, hip, mostly sober environment. I mean, don't get me wrong, there was definitely alcohol beverages and other things around, but you would have to, like, really scan through the crowd to find those things. Yeah. People are just there to enjoy life, because life is beautiful.
Yep.
Right? So one of the things that you mentioned, which I wanted to transfer over to Bev, is that, you know, your message is actually impacting the community in a way that is encouraging people to ask for help for the very first time. And we do somewhat of the same work, and we see that. And that is one of the reasons, like, if we can just impact one, like, just save one life, then all this would be worth it, whether it's the special events, pro-social activities, educational seminars, and the fact that, like, students came up to you and said, hey, can I go to a support group with you? That's the impact that you want to create for at least that one person.
Right.
Yeah, you want to maybe see people partying sober, but that could change somebody's life forever. And I know, Bev, we were talking about you being able to create some of that same impact through some of the work you do. And would you tell our audience a little bit about how important that has been to you?
The support group part?
Well, what? I mean, in regards to, like, just how important it is to share your story.
I think that sharing Megan's story of family addiction impacts people greatly who hear it. I bring Megan's urn with me. I bring her death certificate that says she died from heroin toxicity. I bring along a pink heart that is lit that has her ashes. They can see all these things visually. They know I'm not making any of it up. Mm-hmm. I talk about what happened to Megan, how she was a fun-loving girl, an ordinary girl, who just wanted to have fun with her friends. Rarely do I mention, but this is, I had switched Megan from a Catholic school to the public school at age 14. And that was her transitional age, and she started hanging around with people who made poor choices that Megan made, which was gravitating towards having fun through drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And we have a high propensity in our family for alcohol addiction, but with those 89 genes, it is so intricate that in so many genes that scientists can't unravel how it affects. So at 5 o'clock on April 14th, 2015 is when I learned that Megan had died from a heroin overdose. And that changed my life. Thank you. That changed my life forever. And so when I talk about Megan's story, I also go over her friend, her boyfriend, Alan Mozang's story, because Alan and Megan were together. Mm-hmm. In the summer of 2013, my daughter came to me, my daughter Michelle, and told me that Megan was doing oxys. And at the time, it was like, okay, I'll go talk to her. But, I didn't understand the urgency. Mm-hmm. And so I, of course, confront her, and she says, no, I'm not, Mom. I'm not doing that. And that... the denial and the lying is a part of addiction. And so that summer she started seeing Alan, and I was moving into my boyfriend's house at the time, so Megan stayed behind. I wanted to sell the house. On November 2nd, 2013, I went over to my house to clean it up, and I was with Alan and Megan all day long. 6 hours I spent with them. Both Megan and I left at 4:30. During that entire time, I never saw Alan or Megan doing any drugs. Mm-hmm. I did see them, what I labeled as lazy. But that's a part of the opiate addiction. It makes you not only pain-free, but it also makes you tired. Yeah. That's what the poppies do. Like,
I think even in alcohol addiction, right?
Yeah.
Can be disorganized. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
So one of Alan's friends had stopped over that afternoon, and so he stayed with Alan when both Megan and I left at 4:30. By the time Nate left, he left before 7 o'clock. He saw Alan sitting in the chair across the room, and he shouted out to him, "Hey, dude, are you passed out?" Because Alan had that typical behavior that he would do, and so no one was alarmed. Mm-hmm. And he didn't answer, so his friend left. And then 30 minutes later, two other friends came over, and they checked, and he didn't have a pulse. And so they called 911. The EMTs came. At the time, the law hadn't been passed about Narcan. Mm-hmm. So the EMTs administered an EpiPen 5 times trying to revive Alan, but he couldn't be revived.
And this happened in your house?
Yeah, it happened in my house. And so...
And you were there?
No.
No.
We had left. Megan and I had left at 4:30.
Okay, that's what you said.
So it happened afterwards. But within a few hours, he was already dead. And I didn't see once that they used. And so... I didn't actually find out until after 10 o'clock that night when my sister called, because Megan didn't call me. And she had been taken down to the police station along with his three other friends and questioned. And that was 17 months before Megan died. Now, a rational thinking person would think, oh, if they're doing drugs, then why don't they stop?
Right.
But that's not the way that addiction works. Right. And I had even written Megan a letter telling her that if she kept on this path, she was going to end up the exact same place that Alan was dead. And I didn't want my words to come true, but they did. Yeah. And so the night... that I went over, I couldn't see Megan for 2 hours, okay, that day while they investigated. And when I finally got to see her, I describe what Megan looks like so that the students know what a parent has to go through. Because Megan had been sitting cross-legged in front of a mirror with a picture of Alan in the mirror. Jeez. And so when my ex-husband, her dad, found Megan and she was slumped over in front of that mirror, he pushed her back and her legs were still crossed in the air because rigor mortis had set in. And so her fists were tightly clenched. There was dried blood underneath her nose. She was purple, red, and blue. She didn't really look like my daughter, although I knew that was my daughter. Yeah. And yeah. I had insisted upon seeing her. And I was in such shock, I didn't even say a word. I just stared at her. And then they took Megan and put her in a black body bag and zipped it up and took her out in front of me. Now, she was on GPS monitoring because she had been arrested and charged with 4 felony counts involving heroin. And one was second-degree recklessly endangering a life. So when she was sentenced on December 11th, 2014, we had already had her set up for inpatient treatment, but the judge said no. She could be on GPS to Huber for 12 months in the county jail, and we tried to appeal to a sense of logic that, you know, she's asking for treatment, she's willing to go, we have her set up, and he still said no. And he said in a letter to me, my words at her sentencing should suffice. And I went back and I got the transcripts and what he said, I was there. And he said, the time for treatment was when Megan was a teen. She did go through treatment. At 15, I put her at Options Treatment Facility. It was an intensive outpatient. And she was there for quite a while. And that wasn't the only time. But we also, as divorced parents, went to group to be with her and other parents. And so it's not like we weren't concerned. Right. Because we were highly concerned.
And you're doing everything you possibly could at the time with what you were given.
Right. And so, anyway, when he said no, Megan was put on the GPS monitoring. And that monitor went off as soon as she left the apartment. And we ended up having to take the monitor part back to the jail that night. And Megan's former boyfriend's mom met us first. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the whole jail knew that Megan had died because they were pounding on the pipes, spreading the message that she had died. And so it's a tale, a really sad tale, especially for a parent, especially for her family. Megan's sister was pregnant with identical twin boys. Mm-hmm. Megan was excited. Yeah. She wanted to be there.
Right.
But she ended up dying 7 weeks before Michelle had her twins. And, you know, a lot of times at Appleton East, because I give presentations there with Mrs. Marks, and she was a teacher there, she came to the funeral home. And so she invited me a month after Megan died to start talking to the students at East. And so she knew that we went to the funeral home 2 days after Megan had died, and she always has me describe how my daughter, Michelle, when we saw Megan, she grabbed her hand and she rubbed it. And we were there for about 45 minutes with Megan, and we had spent the entire afternoon, over 4 hours, planning her funeral. And so finally I had to say, Michelle, you're never going to be able to warm up Megan's hand again.
I'm so sorry.
So it greatly affected our entire family. In fact, my son was in Saudi Arabia, and he found out, like I had to tell him over Facebook, the private message, but my sister-in-law had already told him. And he went to work, but he started crying at work. He didn't understand how much it impacted him either. Mm-hmm. And he tried again to go back to work the next day, but all he could do was cry because his sister that he had an argument with before she died, and that was like probably about 7 months before, he and she didn't even talk, so we felt really badly about that too. And so... And Megan has a second brother who's in jail right now. He's got schizophrenia. He was diagnosed with that in 2000. And so I had asked Adam, will you come to the funeral? But because of his schizophrenia, he did not come.
Okay.
And so, people at the funeral home came up to me and thanked me. Because I wrote Megan's obituary saying that she died unexpectedly after struggling with addiction and that she lost her battle. Yeah. And that opiate drugs are very powerful drugs affecting many lives and taking many lives, including her boyfriend's. Yeah. And so I do believe that we need to bring this subject out to the light, because if we do not talk about it, with so many overdoses happening, it's essential that we do bring a message that there is help, there is hope, and there is recovery. When we did that Absolutely. Wisconsin Sharing Without Shame quilt, there's 400 squares. The red are for people who are addicted, black for those who lost their lives, white for those in recovery, and gray for those who are incarcerated. There are many more people in recovery than there are in the black squares.
Yeah.
And we'd like to keep it that way.
Absolutely.
So I try to bring Megan's story to as many schools and students and parent groups as I can so that I can share what happened to us. Mm-hmm. Because awareness, education, and prevention are the ways that we're going to at least stop the death toll.
Right. And I just want to stop you there and thank you as well for coming on today's show for a very personal reason. I mean, this is, yes, a conversation of, like, what is needed in the community, but you have sacrificed and, like, put out that courageous attitude every single day, whether you're, and I've seen you in action, whether you're at a coffee shop or you're engaging with a student audience or you're on the radio or you're doing a TV interview or you're just talking to another person in the community that's being impacted by addiction or has lost their loved one due to the disease of addiction. You are putting yourself out there to bring that hope back. And that conversation is not easy. And for all the listeners out there, I'm hoping and praying that somebody is listening to this episode that has either A, experienced the same thing and finding hope in this conversation. Because together, I think you guys can support each other. But at the same time, for those that are being impacted by addiction or even struggling with addiction, I hope you're also finding hope, right? Because I know deep down inside that one of the biggest reasons why I stayed in active use, or when I talk with other people that are currently out there using and struggling today, is that they're hopeless. Like, the idea of possibility of recovery just seems unreal. Like, it can't even be obtainable. Like, the one, get beyond that shame and that guilt and that inner critic and find, like, a passion for life again outside of drugs and alcohol. And by no means, like, regardless of the social situations that you're growing in, am I saying that, like, you can't change, right? Like, no matter where you're from, no matter what background, no matter how big the difficulties are, you can survive. But to even grasp onto that belief is dang near possible.
It is when you're addicted.
Absolutely, because you're blinded by right. that addiction and your behavior, or maybe your mental illness, or maybe just a really difficult time of trauma or difficulty in your life that you can't foresee how to get out of it.
Right.
Right? But this, you, Bev, and the very few others that have the strength to do what you do are going to change the community. I truly, honestly believe, like I've told you many times before, that within the recovery movement as a whole, all across the nation, although it is moving forward and we're seeing some momentum from a very high level and a very grassroots level, the thing that is going to tip this forward, that tipping point, if you will, is the voices of the mothers. You. The ones that have lost their daughter, like Megan. And I don't know where you guys find the strength from or where you even find the support. So for those that are out there that are just like you or have experienced similar things, can you tell them where you get your support?
I do go to a grief support group, the Red Balloon group, mm-hmm. that meets the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month, one in Oshkosh at Solutions Recovery Club, and one at the Mooring House in Appleton. Mm-hmm. And I also have a grief counselor.
Okay.
So, and my grief counselor has actually put me in connection with other organizations that may be able to help the situation too.
All right. Again, that is the Red Balloon Support Group. That's yes. at Options in Oshkosh and then the Mooring House in Appleton, Wisconsin. You can also contact Bev on Facebook, Bev Kelly Miller. And you can also reach out to Adam Ray Setz at Air and Allies, or you can just find him right on Facebook as well. And my name is Anthony Alvarado, and of course you can reach out to us on WeAllRiseTogether.org. But before I get going on this week's episode, I want to thank everyone out there who is listening to this. Not only are we bringing passionate stories of recovery and hope back to our community through this recovery podcast, but are also bringing stories of redemption and stories of courage and people that are brave and willing to not only come on this mic, but to share their stories in their community, whether it's through music or special events or just one-on-one conversation. The conversation does need to change, and the only way that's going to change is that you start changing that conversation. That's right. Us, the listeners, whoever's out there needs to start changing the conversation around addiction or mental health, or our people will continue to die. Our people will continue to go without resources, without treatment, without recovery support, without the peer support, love, and connection that these people need. I mean, people, not just a statistic, not just somebody that's in the news stories or not in the news stories. These are people's lives, and these are also people's families. We're getting impacted on every single social level by this addiction epidemic. And you can break down what substances are worse than others or whatever the case may be. We have a social crisis in front of us, and the only way, the absolute only way that we continue to see a long-term preventative message is if we start building more connections within the community. That whole mentality of small acts of random kindness and love your neighbors maybe is where you start today. That lending hand of support. If you were ever to ask me, Anthony Alvarado, how can I get involved in this movement? How can I get involved in helping to change our community for the better in hopes to save somebody's life? It starts with you. And that starts with you by maybe looking to a friend or a peer that is struggling, that is going through a hard time, and asking them, how are you doing today? I love you. I care about you regardless of what you struggle with. And even if we can't find the resources immediately, I will work along your side until we do. And we have to advocate all the way to the state capital or nation's capital. We are going to change this community together because that's what we do and lives depend on it. Thank you so much. My name is Anthony Alvarado. We'll see you next week.